the music's like working class or music's middle class, you know, the people who make a living from music but are not playing arenas. I think it's incredibly important. I know the indie world. I know the struggle. I'm very familiar. I am sensitive to it. And you're right. We should be covering it more, especially since it's a bigger slice of the pie, because it's so much easier to get past the gatekeepers and just get what you need. Why do you need the major behind you? The best thing they provide is marketing, you know, and that's something you can hire out for. So I understand the predicament. We do need to give it more focus. I think during COVID, because no one was touring, it was like we didn't have those shows to cover. We didn't have that buzz happening. You know, everybody sort of, you know, looked at like, well, what are the stories? Well, the stories are TikTok. And why is a story TikTok? Because it's breaking records. You know, so, you know, maybe we got away from it. That's not to say that it's not thought about or cared about.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Third edition, now available for pre-order. It's coming out January 17th. Go pick it up. A lot of new stuff in there. Today, my guest is Shirley Halperin. She is the top music editor and one of the most influential music journalists in the country. She's the top music editor at Variety, Variety Magazine. Yes, I guarantee you, whether you knew it or not, you have read her work. You have heard her interviews. She has influenced virtually every music writer over the last 10, 20 years, mentored many of them. And she has interviewed Scooter Braun and Guy Osiri and Harry Styles and Katy Perry, Adele, Snoop Dogg. The list goes on and on. And so, you know, we talk about where music journalism is at and the focus of it. Now, also what we talk about is I feel like Shirley and I are in the more or less the same industry, but we're on separate planes. And I bring this up as I feel like, you know, as she's part of the more or less the mainstream music journalism medium, media, and I'm kind of more in this independent realm. She covers the superstar industry and the people that operate in the superstar industry. And most of the guests that I have on the show or write about are part of the independent music community and operating and functioning in that plane. So we kind of go head to head and discuss that. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. I had a wonderful time chatting with Shirley. She's an absolute legend and hope you dig it. As always, you can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram and Twitter. You can find Shirley and Variety on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. And visit ariestake.com. Get on that email list. That's where you're going to find the most up-to-date, relevant information about the new music business. We send out emails regularly, but not too much. About the music industry. We actually just put a call out to people. We're hosting, Ari's Take is hosting an official stage at South by Southwest this year. It's an official stage. That means you'll be in all the billing and all of that stuff, and you'll be getting paid, all of it. And if you're on the email list, you got that. By the time you're listening to this, applications will probably have been closed by this point. But that's what you do. We host a bunch of different events, and get on that email list if you want to be notified about that stuff, ariestake.com. Also, if you haven't left us a review and you've been listening to the show and you dig it, please leave us a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Those really help. If you're listening on YouTube, leave a comment. We'll get back to you there. All right, let's kick into the show. Shirley Halperin, welcome to the show.
So nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this is interesting because I'm essentially we are turning around the proverbial microphones and the tables. You're on the other side of this proverbial table. I've seen you in my chair, in the interviewer chair, so many times over the years, and you've conducted, I mean, I don't know if we could even count thousands of probably interviews at this point, and interviewed so many people that I've seen and read so many of your articles. Now you're going to be in the chair that gets to be interviewed, I'm excited to talk to you because I feel like we cover opposite sides of the industry. You're kind of you interview a lot of superstars. You cover the stars and moguls, business moguls, and everything like that. And I feel like you're kind of in that realm. And we're gonna dig into that a little bit later. But I feel like I'm this, mostly in this scrappy indie DIY realm, which has kind of really risen in prominence over the last 10 years. I'm curious just to see where we collide here, because I didn't know how much overlap there was, and I'm curious to jump in. But before we get into all that, I know you just had the Variety's big Hitmakers event this year. Can you just discuss what that is and how it started? I know, I believe you had a hand in starting that or launching that when you came to Variety. But step us back to what Hitmakers is, because it looked like an incredible event, and just how the event went.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was. I'm finally caught up on my sleep because I literally have not slept for many weeks. It's our big tentpole event, and I came up with it really after doing a lot of power lists over the years, these power lists and, power 100, 40 under 40, I'd done so many of them and they felt very gratuitous. It's whoever had the highest title or the most clout or the ear of somebody would get on these lists. And it never recognized the people who actually did the work, or, rarely did it recognize those people. So I came up with this idea of let's take the 25 biggest songs of the year and let's break them down and let's figure out who worked on what, who produced it, who wrote it, where did the idea come from, who came up with the sample, who A&R'd the project, who marketed it. If it was a big sink, who worked on the sink? This year, Running Up That Hill is the 12th most consumed song of the year. So we recognize the person at Sony Publishing who got that song cleared. And it's a really interesting mix. It's about 150 people. Mm-hmm. And, A&R, promotion, marketing, commerce, management, executives. It really runs the gamut. Mm-hmm. And it was so cool to be in a room where you have Ethan Stevens, who engineered, I think it was Jimmy Cooks by Drake, and Julie Greenwald, the chairman of the Atlantic Records music group. To have the two of them sitting within feet of each other, I thought was kind of cool. And anyway, it went really well, and we had some stars, but it was really mostly about the people in the industry who really make shit happen.
That's great, because these are the unsung heroes, the ones that are not typically on stages necessarily, at the massive award shows, and the ones that, we don't really have even credits as much anymore with the loss of physical media. The credits, it's hard. Spotify is only really showing us producer and songwriters, maybe, if those credits get to them. So it's nice to know, any way to highlight some of these people that are working behind the scenes, especially on the business side, because there is so much that happens. Like you mentioned with the sync, the Running Up That Hill sync, the Kate Bush song, and I read that piece and listened to a bit of the podcast where in that A&R that you're talking about. Amy Coles, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who made that happen. And, Nora Feldman, of course, the music supervisor, for, Stranger Things. That got that synced. But, so that's awesome. What inspired you, when you, came to Variety, which was how long have you been at Variety? Five years. Like that?
I came in 2017.
Right. When you first got to Variety, what was the focus and what was your angle? What are you kind of, when you jumped into this place that didn't traditionally cover music necessarily, and here you are coming in as like the music person. What did you want to bring, and how has that worked out over the last 5 years?
Well, I love relaunching magazines. I've done a lot of them in my career. You know, everything from like huge consumer magazines like Us Weekly when it relaunched in 2002. I worked there. Teen People relaunched.
What does it mean to relaunch? What is that?
To relaunch means to like completely redo the magazine, rip it up.
Oh, okay.
You know, new styles, new fonts, new everything. Sometimes you tweak the coverage. You know, you breathe it new life. Usually when you relaunch a magazine, it means that something is stagnating. And the idea of starting something new, which is like a relaunch, really appealed to me. I'd already been at the Hollywood Reporter where Janice Min relaunched and I was on that team. Okay. So I really felt like I'd already kind of gotten to the trade world, was able to understand how trade magazines were different from consumer magazines. And I spent the next, 2010, I got to the Hollywood Reporter and, here we are at Variety. So 12 years of trade magazine experience. In the middle of that, I worked at Billboard too, because Billboard also needed a relaunch, at around 2012, 2013. And Janice Min, who was the president of the Hollywood Reporter, got oversight of Billboard as well. She's not, I think she would admittedly say she doesn't know a ton about music. Mm-hmm. So she brought me in to relaunch that. And we literally like flew to New York, spent a couple of weeks with the staff, getting to know everyone, ripping up the pages, renaming everything. And it's exciting, cool. I know print is an old medium, but as someone who's worked in it, like my whole life, anytime you get those opportunities, they're very exciting. And Variety had no music coverage to speak of.
Yeah.
They didn't have a dedicated music editor. And in fact, one of the things I like to laugh about is Variety didn't understand music so much that back in like 1956, it wrote that rock and roll was a fad and Elvis like would be gone by the summer. So
that
this is not a place that had a reputation for solid music coverage. But I think they saw in me like, they could hit the ground running. I already had just like 7 years, 8 years of experience. I had a team. I had a lot of ideas like hit makers. There were a lot of things I just couldn't pull off at Hollywood Reporter or at Billboard for various reasons. And I was like, here's an opportunity. There's budget. It's a beautiful magazine. They're putting a lot of money into print, which people don't really do, but you can do in the trade world because it's the one place where advertising has not fallen like the rest of media. So anyway, that's what happened. It was an opportunity. I wasn't looking for it. It came to me and I was like, oh, the chance to launch a new project, to come up with some new ideas. Yeah, sure.
So what's your focus as the music, the head of the music department, I guess, at Variety? What is the focus of the magazine and what do you cover?
It's the entertainment business up and down, from the C-suite down to the person who does makeup on a film set, and especially the below-the-line people, those people who do makeup, production, costuming. So what I did was I took what Variety is really good at, which is that, the covering of the craft of movie making or of making TV shows, and I applied it to music. So again, it's like, we do interview a lot of big stars, but we interview a lot more producers and songwriters and executives. Because they're so strong on below the line in film and TV, I said, we need to be strong on below the line in music. And that includes music for film and music for TV. The music supervisors have not had an easy decade and a half of trying to win the respect of the industry. And we are like full on in that, advocating for them. We call it music for screens, but it's any music that's applied to visual media. We cover, I don't think there's any other media that covers it the way we do or as much or as regularly.
Yeah.
So I saw these like opportunities that were already there at Variety and I just like reapplied them to the music world.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, we cover sync licensing and music for screens on this show quite a bit. We had Madonna Wade Reed on. She was discussing, you know, the fight for music supervisors to unionize and all that goes into that because, you know, famously, music supervisors are one of the only contractors not protected by employee benefits on a film set. Everybody else who works on a film kind of is protected by employment law, like in W-2'd employees and all of that, except for the music supervisors. And so she was on talking about that. But, you know, more so it's you know, what I find with Variety's coverage and just kind of your angle in particular, which I'm curious to hear your perspective on, is writing for the kind of those people that you're highlighting, meaning that executive level or the people just below that line and those in the industry. Do you find, because yes, they're the, you know, the unsung and the people behind the scenes, but it is still, I still consider that the superstar business. You know, with independents pulling in 30 to 35% of the global market share, I rarely see the independent music community covered by any of these mainstream news outlets like Variety or Hollywood Reporter. Billboard has definitely jumped into that finally, you know, after years. And that's like, you know, when I was coming up as an indie touring musician, there was nothing out there for any of us to learn how to do the music business. You read Donald Passman's book and you're like, oh, okay, I need these five key people on my team. Cool. I know how to negotiate a record contract. Where's the record contract for me to negotiate? Because no one, he definitely didn't tell you how to get a record deal. No one was telling you how to get a record deal. They're just like, oh, you need a record deal. You need a publisher. You need a publicist. You need a manager and you need a booking agent. And you're like, oh, cool. How? Literally nobody was saying how to do any of this stuff. And so it's like, I was looking around, and this was 10 years ago. I'm looking around, I'm just like, who is talking to the tens of thousands of independent musicians and managers and everybody else trying to figure this out? And it's kind of, it's so elusive. I felt there's this massive gap. But like the superstar industry, like you're talking about, whether you work in a major label, you're still in the superstar industry. That's their entire focus, is how do we make superstars? How do we get that? And then this leap to the tens of thousands of other people who are working in our industry. But I didn't see anybody talking about that. So like, you know, when I launched Ari's Take as a blog, saying like, here's what I'm learning running a music career. And then I got to talk to, and then I started interviewing hundreds, literally hundreds of managers and booking agents and indie labels and artists. And I'm like, holy shit, there's a movement happening here. There's a lot of, like these people are making shit really happen and literally nobody was talking about it. I'm just like, why is everyone ignoring this? So I'm like curious, you know, as somebody who has had the opportunity to interview virtually anyone and everyone in the industry, from Scooter Braun to Harry Styles to everybody in between, has there ever been that discussion over the last 10 to 15 years as we've seen the industry shift away, this power dynamic from you need a major label to have a successful music career to holy shit, the indies have 35% of the market share and, you know, they're doing very, very well. And there's a subculture and there's middle class musicians and all of that. Has there ever been a discussion of let's talk about that, let's cover that? Or is it just like, that's not a readership, we don't care?
No, it's definitely something that I've thought about. It's it's the music's like working class or music's middle class, you know, the people who make a living from music but are not playing arenas. I totally get that. And I think it's incredibly important. I have roots in the indie world because my husband was in an amazing indie band called The Lilies and then the Pernice Brothers, and had like a just beautiful run of amazing albums in the 90s, a lot of which were recorded at my house. So I know, I know the indie world. I know the struggle. I'm very familiar. My favorite bands are, you know, bands like the Fruit Bats, who are definitely very indie. So yeah, I am sensitive to it. And you're right, we should be covering it more, especially since it's a bigger slice of the pie, because it's so much easier to get past the gatekeepers and just get what you need. There's actually a pretty good example of it even today. I noticed that Mike Dean, super producer, worked with Travis Scott, you know, Kanye, whoever, all the big rappers, Madonna, and all kinds of people. He was on Zane Lowe today on Apple Music, and I know he just like texted Zane Lowe or got that booking himself. There was no label involved. There was no manager. Sure. There was no publicist. When you can do something like that, then why do you need the major behind you? The only thing they provide, you know, or the best thing they provide is marketing, you know, and that's something you can hire out for. So I understand the predicament. We do need to give it more focus. I think during COVID, because no one was touring, you know, it was like we didn't have those shows to cover. We didn't have that buzz happening. You know, everybody sort of, you know, looked at like, well, what are the stories? Well, the stories are TikTok. And why is a story TikTok? Because it's breaking records. You know, so, you know, maybe we got away from it. That's not to say that it's not thought about or cared about. Another kind of like good example of the way I approach indie stuff is, for example, this new song by One Republic called I Ain't Worried. It's from the Top Gun soundtrack. It is a flip of Peter, Bjorn, and John's Young Folks. I mean, listen to it. It is that. And if you look at the credits, Peter, Bjorn, and John are credited on it. So, of course, I know Peter, Bjorn, and John. So I email Bjorn and I'm like, hey, can we do an article about your place in the song? And I later learned that it's like, now it's like a conflict. Did they actually, you know, did they need to credit it? Ryan Tedder does an interview with us, and I tell Chris Woolman, our star music writer, make sure you ask him about this Peter, Bjorn, and John thing. I want to know. And then he gets the whole story, and that's how we bring the indie into it, you know?
Well, because the big artist stole from the indie.
Yes, but I'm smart enough to know that Peter, Bjorn, and John is worth talking to. Totally. You know, like, because I appreciate their audience, even though it's not huge, and they are indie, and you can email them, you know, and that's kind of what I'm trying to say. These things pop up, and we find our way in.
That's good, and I'm curious, so who is Variety's readership, and specifically the music readership of Variety?
It's entertainment industry. So it's everyone from like Steven Spielberg, you know, down to the guy working at the recording studio. You know, a lot of sound professionals and a lot of creatives and people who sell IP. Of course, the tech industry is looking at us just so we can tell them what everybody else is talking about. Sure. But, you know, listen, this magazine is 110 years old almost.
Crazy.
It's like, it's one of the oldest brands in America. There are very few brands that go back to 1905 and are still around, you know?
Yeah.
And that speaks to like kind of like its purpose in the world, which is to provide an unfiltered lens at what is happening in Hollywood. And that includes music, which for a long time was the dark horse, the redheaded stepchild, whatever you want to call it. Music was not in the conversation. And now it is, you know? Yeah. And that's the big difference.
Yeah, and I mean, as in the Hollywood limelight and all of that, and of course, you know, in the public, it was there. I'm curious where you think music journalism, specifically the purpose of it, is now. I mean, for some context, you know, people aren't discovering music anymore from editorial, from print, you know, from you know, it's not like,
I don't know if they ever did. Well, maybe there was a small window.
Right. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, it seemed like there was more relevance to album reviews, concert reviews, that kind of stuff 20, 30 years ago. But even, I mean, even in the indie realm, and you know, most artists that came about 10 years ago will cite influential music blogs as their jumping off point. You know, most of the superstars will cite that, even, you know, they started there because, you know, if you got a write up 10 years ago, if you started charting on Hype Machine, which is the music blog aggregator 10 years ago, and you know, you got like 10 of these influential blogs and you're in the top 10 of the most written about Hype Machine artist or song of that week, that day, whatever, everyone in the industry is calling you. It's like if you, you know, 5 years ago, you got on New Music Friday on Spotify, or you have a song now trending on TikTok, everyone's calling you. So even 10 years ago, I saw that, you know, music journalism in some capacity was incredibly relevant because people were discovering. You got a write-up on Consequence of Sound 10 years ago, 300,000 SoundCloud plays overnight. And that was significant. That meant something. I'm curious your opinion of what music journalism, the point of it or the focus is now, just for maybe the general public, but also the industry?
Well, I think contextualizing the music we have today, you know, with the past is very important. Like, you know, if you look at the top 25 songs this year, three of them have huge interpolations where it is key to the song. Big Energy, which samples Tom Tom Club, First Class with Fergie, Cold Heart with all the Elton John songs. You know, these are new creations to a new generation.
But and someone to explain needs, yeah, to what an interpolation, do you want to explain what an interpolation means?
An interpolation is like a sound alike. So, you know, in Big Energy, Tom Tom Club's and Mariah Carey's famous sample that has already been a hit twice is now a hit for the third time.
But it's not technically a sample because they don't actually use the recording of the original song. Right. They're kind of nodding to it, referencing it. It's not a cover because it's their
although
own song.
Although it sounds a lot like it. It was recreated. Exactly. It was recreated so that they don't have to use the master, but they do have to pay for publishing. Now, when you interpolate, that can eat a lot of the publishing. Like, I know for a fact that the Fergie sample in First Class is like 60-something percent of that song. And sometimes you have to give up that publishing in order to ride the chart, you know, and get it up the chart. So the context of that, where did this song come from? Why is it so hooky? Why is it so danceable? It has history in gay New York. You know, that needs to be out there. All those stories that surround the music, I still think you need music journalists for. You know, a blogger can't always pull it off. And also, they're not fact-checked. They're not edited. You know, every one of our articles goes through like an editing process. It's really about quality over quantity. But also, I would love to point out like a couple of stories that I thought were very important that we did, especially during COVID, because it was the time when I was like, oh, I have time to pursue these stories I've wanted to do for so many years. One of them was about the language and recording contracts and using the terms master and slave. I'm sure Ari, you know, as someone who works on music, you know, there's a master recording and then there's the slave recording and it's used in tech. And it's really offensive to people like Pharrell Williams. And he was the one who told me how offensive it was. And I got super interested and started digging. And I was like, okay, well, this is an engineering term. So where did engineering start, you know, in America? And then I went in this deep hole and, you know, learned about these little pockets in the middle of the country where they were printing, guess what? Ku Klux Klan orations. And these were the early records. So when they say master and slave, you start thinking like, oh my God, this is like way more fucked than I even thought it was. And I put a lot of work into that story. Jem Oswad, who works with me, did an amazing story last year about New York music scene after 9/11. We were both there. We, you know, experienced this horrible tragedy. We got to see the months after when it was like cleanup and what happened to the Strokes album that came out that week or the Mariah Carey record, you know, like, you know, he did an amazing piece where he talked to club owners and, you know, people really who were had active projects at the time and and how difficult that was. So, you know, it's not the old music journalism. It's not Lester Bangs. It's not like this is how drunk I got or this is how many lines of blow I did at the show. You know, this is like, you know, this is the way I approach stories that I would want to read. And I'm like a voracious consumer of content. So I think I have a good nose for it.
No, that's great. And it's, you know, I it's appreciated to that there are still funded editorial staffs out there. And you know, I think there isn't, the lines are very blurred now that everything under mass consumption exists online. You made a you differentiated between blogs and bloggers and journalists and saying we're fact check and edited and they're not, but they're both one click and they're both on the same World Wide Web. And so when I read an article from you on Variety or I read an article from Joe Schmo on Joe Schmo's blog, to me, it's kind of the same, you know, well, not to me, but like to a lot of people, it could be the same. And they kind of get that's the challenge with like fact checking and fake news and yada, 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 all of that stuff. but it is, you know, I guess that's where the, like, brand recognition comes in. But there's also, like, I don't know if you followed, you know, what Rolling Stone started to do a couple years ago. This was in 2020, where with their Culture Collective program or whatever, you could literally pay a quote-unquote membership fee to be part of their Culture Collective as Rolling Stone, which gave you access to write whatever you wanted to write on rollingstone.com, get a byline, and you could literally, and there was no fact-checking, there was no editorial oversight, and they're like, oh, but this is in the subculture community of this culture. You go to rollingstone.com, it's the same thing. And so it's like, how am I supposed to know that this is the one that's not fact-checked and this is the one that is fact-checked? And so when I look at that, I'm like, well, this Rolling Stone is supposedly supposed to be a legitimate music news organization that has this incredible history and, you know, has broken incredible stories over the years, to be honest. And then, you know, with real journalists working there. And then you have something like this where it's like, wow, anyone can literally buy their way in to write and get a byline on this thing. Like, did you follow that story? Do you know much about it?
What's
your opinion on that? Real quick, I want to let you know about DistroKid. Well, I'm sure you already know about DistroKid, but they are partners with Ari's Take, and they are a great company that can help get your music distributed to Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, all of that. Over a million artists use DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've distributed some of my music in the past. And something I appreciate about DistroKid as not just an artist, but someone who studies this space, is they have been one of the most innovative companies over the last 10 years. They came in and completely changed the game. One of the first companies offering unlimited uploads, and now most of the other distributors have had to change their policies to kind of copy and follow suit what DistroKid was doing, and the industry had changed, of course. DistroKid doesn't keep a commission. That means you keep 100% of your royalties and earnings from the DSPs. They also offer payment splitting. They call it splits, something that for me at this point is a deal breaker. I don't want to have to cut checks to all my collaborators and the producers and everybody else that is owed royalties and owed splits from my earnings. DistroKid will cut those checks directly. You can get them to your collaborators to sign up, and then DistroKid will cut all the checks to all your collaborators. And they were one of the first to offer that of the DIY self-service distributors. DistroKid continues to innovate. Check them out. If you need to get your music out there, DistroKid.com.
Wow, did I follow that story. I did. Listen, I mean, it's basically just an advertorial, right? You can buy an advertorial in a magazine and you can print whatever you want. And at the top, it says advertorial and that's it. You know, it kind of looks like the magazine, kind of doesn't. But, you know, you'd have to be a real, really discerning to see the difference.
Right.
This is happening at websites all over, music websites, where there's a pay-to-play thing that is going on. It's very disturbing to someone like me and to us as a journalistic like operation, because it's not journalism. And there's so much of it happening now. This is just another example with maybe a bigger name. I don't know what to tell you. I don't like it, you know? I believe Forbes has something similar, not exactly the same, but I get tripped up on these websites too, where I'm like, wait a second, is this like a legitimate article, or did, you know, did Rebecca Newman write it? You know, like I need to know the difference. Yeah. Who is this writer? I've never heard of this person. So even I get tripped up on it. And it's not a great practice. I don't really know what else to say, since we're part of the same company,
right?
Parent company. But, you know, yeah. I've also had friends who have been published and are so stoked. And I'm like, but I don't understand.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's like, you know, Forbes in particular, you know, it has the name similar to Rolling Stone. I've had some friends that have been writers for Forbes, and they told me what they get paid, which is very, very, very little.
Right. It's like peanuts, right?
Peanuts. I mean, it's like, you know, they told me it's honestly, some blogs pay more than what they are paid to write for Forbes as a contributor.
And they're not edited, and it's just thrown up there. Yeah. I think that's wrong.
The website. Yeah.
The only thing I will say, Ari, the difference between us and the blog is we monetize that website. You know, there's 24 million people coming every month, and we sell, you know, we sell against that, and the blog can't, which means the blog might not be there in 2 years, but we definitely will.
Well, that's not fair to say. I mean, what do you call a blog? And what do you call a legitimate website?
Like a one-man operation who...
I mean, there's, you know, there's plenty of blogs out there that are music blogs that are 10-person operations that are not a legitimate news source with an editorial staff and all of that stuff. I don't know where the line is, to be honest, because it's like...
I just don't see how they do it. Like, how do they make money, you know? Like,
well, a lot of them have ads. A lot of them, like... Believe me, like, I mean, what do you consider music business worldwide? Let's go there.
Well, we own them too.
Oh, now. See, I thought that was a block.
So we monetize them. Yeah, exactly. Because we have... But
they started as a one-man operation. They started as just, you know, as a blog, I guess. And now they're a legitimate news organization because your parent company bought them? I don't know about that.
Okay. Fair. Oh, and just the bloggers. You know, not at all.
No, I started as a blogger. Let's talk about
that. No, I did too. I had a fanzine was a blog. Like, you know, we all come from the same place. I get it.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, that's just like the challenge of you know, as a consumer, like when I have my consumer hat on or I have my, you know, hat of just like trying to learn something. And, you know, and I think it's like, I think there's a lot of poo-pooing from the journalist class, if you will, of like, how can people be so stupid to believe this fake news and get off of Facebook for your news information, blah, 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 whatever. But it's like... Where is the line with this? And it's like, sure, he's like, well, believe your legitimate news sources. And then it's like, well, what's legitimate? Is Music Business Worldwide when it was just run by the one guy and now supposedly, I didn't even know that they're under the same parent company. I thought it was still just him. But, you know, are they legit? Is Digital Music News? Is Ari's Take? Is Variety, is Forbes, is Rolling Stone? Is Rolling Stone, the piece that I just read on the Culture Collective, legit? But it's under Rolling Stone. So it's so blurry right now. And it's like, it's why I kind of encourage my friends and colleagues and my writer friends and journalist friends and everybody to like, take a step back and just like, you're embedded in kind of the understanding of how the whole system works. But the vast majority of people aren't. And even when I'm trying to find information, like someone confidently could post, you know, facts from the music industry. And I'm like, oh, this is so niche. Why would anybody go through the time to publish something, put something up on a seemingly legitimate looking website with hard numbers of something and
not be legit?
And not be legit. And sometimes I've looked into those numbers. And I'm like, wow, these are completely wrong. No, they check out, or other way they're wrong. Like, either way, it's like sometimes they check out and sometimes they don't. And I was just like, you know, I'm somebody who is like, you know, I'll dig to the core. I'll like go deep, as deep as I can, and try to fact check it. Most people won't. You know, and it's like, I don't know if you're familiar with Sherry Hugh and what she does with Water and Music. Where does that fall? That's a whole new class of stuff where like they're not even – It's like they have a paid subscriber base.
Right.
There are no advertisements. They have 1,500 or 2,000 people that pay for their newsletter, essentially, and they do really, really excellent reporting. But I've hit up Sherry. I'm just like, you know, love you, completely respect you. This is not correct, and this is the, you know, and then they've corrected it and everything. But it's like, sure, there's not that level, but the reporting that they're doing, no one else is covering in the industry. And so I feel like it's important too.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I wish I had the money to roll up all of those sites because they're all incredibly valuable. What Sherry does is very valuable. And I've used her as a writer before. And you know, you're not wrong. I would say the advantage is Google rankings, which does actually filter according to the legitimacy of the news outlet and the number of other outlets that cite the news outlet. So for example, like when, you know, somebody dies, like Kirstie Alley died recently, you know, that Variety obit is going to rank very high because Variety is a credible source in entertainment, which would cover Kirstie Alley. And this is where your Water and Music and even your Hits Daily Double, which I read religiously, it just doesn't show up in search. And that's where they lose kind of part of that audience. But that's not to say it's any less important. I still go to Hits every day and I subscribe to Substacks, and, you know, and 1500 people subscribe to Sherry's. Who knows how many subscribe to Bob Lefsetz, you know, like these are still
too many.
these are still ways to get information. And, you know, we always say about Hits, and I worked there in the past, so I feel like I could say this. You know, maybe they reach 12,000 people, but they're the 12,000 right people, you know, so it's a different formula. But you're right that if you're a starting musician, and this was a problem even when I was starting in the 90s, you know, it is really hard to find information. And the Donald Passman book will only get you so much. And by the way, he had a thing in his book about master and slave, and he made like a little quip about it. I made him, you know, alerted him to, and he removed it from future editions when I wrote that article. You know, so he's he's old school, like you could tell. And that's not relevant for the new music business.
Right.
And I've met a lot of 20-something-year-olds who's like, they're fucking brilliant. You know, they really see the system for what it is. It's not different, you know, in its foundation from what we do, which is promote music, get it out there, get it played, get it heard. But the platforms are so different, and you need to like know them. So that's the challenge that I find. And, you know, who's going to teach you if you're an upcoming musician, like how to do this and how to do that? There's a million services out there that will post to all of your socials and all of your everything, you know, and it's like, no, you need to actually be focused and creative and think and strategize. And who's going to tell you all that? So I hear you.
Yeah. I will. But
That's right. Ari will. Just watch this show and you'll know everything.
But and you're right. I mean, and that's the thing. And I feel like just, you know, I believe we started with what is the relevancy and focus of music journalism right now. But it's, you know, it is like who the audience is. And as us, like, you know, you have said who your audience is and Variety's audience and you know, and it's everybody who's getting, you know, those print subscriptions to Variety magazine, which, you know, there is still a large audience that gets that print subscription, I'm sure. Yeah. But
it's not cheap. It's like $400 a year.
Exactly. So these are these companies that can afford that, and their employees get the benefit of having that in the office when they go in, if there's an office anymore. But yeah. And, you know, and so it's like, but for everybody else that is kind of emerging or not necessarily working at a big company, and it's kind of like where to find the information and where is the useful stuff out there. So anyway,
I mean, Ari, just as a little aside, I have in my office these like old directories from like, you know, a million years ago, like your directory to management, all of the record companies, like you know, those things, as like funny as they seem today, they were incredibly helpful because it was one place, you know, where you could find everything.
And they're out there, and people, you know, sell them, and that's the thing. And it's kind of like I get marketed to that all the time based on, you know, how well Instagram and Google knows me. I'm getting these ads all the time to buy these lists of stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, I interviewed this agent a little bit ago, and she was like, you know, she's like, the era of not being able to find someone's contact information is long over. I mean, you know, like you mentioned, Mike Dean could just, you know, text Zane Lowe or something to get on his show. Anyone can DM anyone. Like, I literally, you know, I'm organizing, and it's just like, that's just kind of how it is. You're sliding into the DMs right now, and you can do it. But with those lists that have all the contact information for everyone in the industry, it's pros and cons, because it's like, yes, you have that information, but like, now good luck trying to get anyone at Spotify to respond to your email or anyone's email, because it's like their emails are now out there and everybody's trying to get an editor at Spotify to respond to their email.
But, which was interesting, by the way, at Hitmakers, because Spotify had a table and there were a bunch of editors at their table, and people in the room were like, oh my God, you got that editor? And I was like, like now the editors at Spotify are like kind of like the way superstars. We used to look at like big record people,
radio DJs,
you know?
Yeah, or A&R. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I would say like, you know, I mean, still to some extent, but more so 5 years ago, it was like the Spotify playlist editors were the most powerful people in the music industry. Now, the most powerful gatekeeper in the music industry is not a person. It's the TikTok algorithm.
Yeah.
Or it's the Spotify algorithm, to be honest. And it's like I've seen, you know, within the back end of Spotify for Artists, and I look at some of these artists that I work with, and it's like what an editorial Spotify playlist ad does to your song. But then also what the algorithmic leverage can do to the song, which is far greater. And then what a TikTok viral song thing can do to your song, which is even greater, far bigger than what any Spotify editor could do. And wow. Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's constantly evolving and it's so quick. And it's like where we're at right now with what is most powerful when it comes to reaching people. It's no longer the editors. I mean, like they can do a little bit and they can help, but honestly we are evolving as streaming community, and Spotify will be the first to showcase this, away from the human touch, fortunately, however you want to look at it, into the algorithmic realm. Right. And the algorithm is more powerful now on Spotify than any human editor, and this is like now more a new thing. And it's like people, you know, which for better or worse, it's like no.
Well, it's going to get better because I feel like it's still early days, even in the algorithm. They're going to fine tune it. You know, like the way that your listening habits continue once you're past your song that you clicked on, you know, that is going to be more refined and more specific to you. I definitely see that coming, and basing it off of like emotions and lyrics and tone and all of those things that will come into play. So I don't know. I find it really exciting and interesting too, you know? Yeah.
No, it's great. I mean, it's like, right, Spotify no longer, it's like we're less concerned about genre definition. It's more about mood and feeling.
Yes, 100%, 100%.
Right.
And
right.
It'll keep people engaged longer. If you can get them to stick around for two more songs, that's significant, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's what's so interesting, which I don't think most people realize, is Spotify is a business. It's an app. It's a platform. Their main goal, just like social media platforms, is to keep you on
the platform.
Platform longer. And so, you know, it's like the editors have a boss too, and they can't just put on whatever they want willy-nilly, because if the song that they put on because it's their friends or because they like dig it, they really love it, but they're the only one who loves it, and somebody listens to that and then it gets them to leave Spotify, now they're dinged and they're you know, and that's a challenge for them. And similarly, like you said, like the algorithmic approach is like, what happens after you finish the album that you chose to listen to?
Yeah.
Where does it go for you? Right. Yeah. And the whole focus is how are they going to keep you on longer? Just like Instagram or TikTok. And that's the whole focus there.
Oh, God help us all.
Seriously. Yeah. I don't know if you've jumped on the train.
I mean, I'm on my phone constantly, you know, it's insane. The amount of screen time. It's crazy.
Right. Right. So anyway, I'm curious to hear where you think the industry as a whole is heading, and maybe what are some of the more exciting things that you have heard about, discovered, learned recently, something that is getting you excited of where the industry is heading. What are your thoughts on that?
Where the industry is heading? Well, I hear a lot of really good music now. You know, that's I good. Feel like more is like kind of coming up to the top. Like, I think Steve Lacy's a great example of like something that I would have been into as a kid, and I would totally, I am into as an adult.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that the good stuff is getting through. There's a lot of amazing female songwriters and singers that are coming out that, you know, not all of them will make it, but there's just so much talent out there. Mm-hmm. I love that kids are picking up instruments, you know, guitar sales like really spiked during the pandemic. Yeah. And now drum sales look like they're going up. Like, you know, I was a kid who like played in the orchestra and like was very exposed to music, to a lot of music, and classical music especially. So I'm thrilled about that. The things that worry me are things that I'm kind of active in, like the lyrics being used against rappers in criminal trials. I think that's really fucked. You know,
can you discuss that a little bit for people that aren't familiar with what you mean there?
Yeah, so, you know, if you're a rapper and you get in trouble with the law, and it progresses to the point where you're going to be, you know, where you're in court or you are in jail or whatever it is, the prosecution has been using, in certain states, lyrics to prove, as if they're proof of the person's guilt. And as we know about hip hop especially, but all forms of art, they're not necessarily literary. They're not literal, you know?
Right.
They are literary in that there's often a lot of fiction. There's often, you know, whatever makes the song works is the lyric that's going to get in there. It's not necessarily fact.
Sure.
And
it's art.
It's art. And it's like, it would be like using someone's movie. Well, you made a movie about a slasher and then you had a knife in your hand. So that means you're guilty. You know, like, it's ridiculous. And I feel
it's racist is what it is. But
it's racist. Yeah. Exactly. And it's incredibly discriminatory and it's prejudicial. That's the word. And the only thing that states are being asked to do, and there's a bill that's in the Congress right now, is just answer four questions before you consider using the lyric. You know, you know, will this affect the jury negatively because of what rap or hip hop represents? You know, like there's a sort of checklist that you need to go through, and it's not asking a lot, but it's very important. You know, we're looking at, like, talking about the 25 biggest songs of the year, Push and P by Gunna and Young Thug was like number 14, and they're both in jail. And there's no hope of them, like, getting out anytime soon.
At Young Thug's trial, the lyrics were used against him, and that's the issue.
And Kevin Wiles from 300 had to go down to Atlanta to speak as a character witness, and they grilled Kevin Wiles like he was, like, some dude who had, like, a corner store. This is a mogul, you know? This is someone who is incredibly successful. It was almost like, well, why are you here and who are you? It's like, we gotta just give the respect to this art and stop treating it like, you know, like it's been treated in the past, and it's really wrong. It's also interesting that that's a topic that came up in the 90s, remember, with, like, Interscope and the parental advisory. And also in the 90s was these problems with Ticketmaster and Pearl Jam.
Well, everything's come back around. It's all cyclical.
But it's like, literally, we have made zero progress in the black lyrics arena and in the tickets arena. Nothing has changed.
Now Taylor Swift fans are suing Ticketmaster. And so hopefully that might change something or another. And you know, there was a congressional panel, or at least some Congress members that are looking into breaking up Ticketmaster, calling them a monopoly. So hopefully something will change. I'm not super hopeful.
I hope so.
But I mean, California just pass a law limiting the use of rap lyrics? That's what you're saying. You know, in California
and New York are ahead of the game on this. Right. The Young Thug Gunna criminal trial is in Atlanta, which is a very weird situation. The whole, you know, Atlanta is the capital of hip hop, and you know, this just it doesn't feel right. And so I'm very involved in that. I'm also I'm Israeli. I was born and raised in Israel. And I go back a lot and have been, you know, very active on the whole concert cancellation thing, you know? Yep. This is another, it's a very similar issue. Why is music being punished? Films aren't punished. Visual art isn't punished. Why is it only music? Is it because we're an easy target? Because you can convince a band, because they have a little bit of social media heat, that they could just pull? When a band pulls a show, it's like millions of dollars. People are out millions of dollars, and people who are working the show and sold and were expecting to go and enjoy it.
Right.
All of those things. And it's like, Israel's a tiny country, and it's very hard. It's a very hard country to defend. But on this concert front, I feel like I feel very engrossed and engaged and trying to make it happen less. So that was the pros and the cons.
Well, no, and I can relate and understand. I mean, it's all can be hypocritical in some capacity, because it's like, are they not going after the films? But it's like, okay, then why aren't you encouraging or threatening or you know pressuring rather artists to cancel tours in certain states, you know, yeah. that have outlawed abortion. Like, yes. where are you in that capacity? And it's like, oh, you don't care. They can go tour to all of the states that have outlawed abortion. But when it goes to a country that or anywhere that you feel like in the moment you're it hit a social media cycle where you're outraged about that. But it's like, just look at home. What the fucked up shit we're doing, and yes. it's like, okay, like just like do something, it's, like talk about what you actually understand would be
and
helpful.
Honestly, Ari, music and art is not about dividing, it's about bringing mm-hmm. people together, you know, and it's something that can be enjoyed universally and doesn't necessarily have politics attached to it musically, you know, like mm-hmm. it's just it's such a bummer again just to see something that hasn't changed in so long. We're talking about decades here, you know. Mm-hmm. No one will come to the table, no one will say, well, let's do a concert in Israel in a co-ed village, kind of like something sure. where you can bring the two sides together. That's not happening. And yeah. You know, it's not like I'm taking advantage of a position, but I'm using this position to at least put the light on these issues that
yeah.
that just keep coming back around.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue that that has been happening now for decades. There's decades. No one that has really I don't really see an end in sight to that challenging discussion or controversy or just yeah understanding or lack thereof for the greater community. But anyway, yeah, I think it's you know, where it's there's progress being made, it's like, you know, one step forward, three steps backwards in some capacity. Sure. When it maybe comes to Ticketmaster and it comes to lyrics and whatnot, but hopefully we're moving in the right direction. I'm curious. I want, this has been very fascinating. I really appreciate you kind of going down these crazy roads with me as I just kind of
I love it.
Yeah. I'm thinking that in my train of thought moves. But I have one final question that I ask everybody on the show. What does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
Just to be heard in whatever way. You know, I mean, I'm heard through my outlet, and I have my writers and our articles. And, you know, if you have something to say, the beauty of TikTok is there it is, and you can say it. And if you have something to sing, it's the same. And I've discovered, and so have labels, they've signed a lot of acts based on just people who put themselves out there and were incredibly talented. And that's kind of like the guts of the music business. You know, when you strip away all of the bullshit, it still comes down to like, this person has talent, or this person has star quality, or this person has beautiful songs, you know. And I'm still a believer in that. And even seeing it from the view of the C-suite, the people that we interview, it still seems like that passion is very pure. You know, I've said in the past, like, would I have gone into the music business knowing how the sausage is made? Like, now I know. So would I have done it again? I don't know that I would have, but every single person I've asked this question to in the music business has said 100% yes.
All right.
So yeah. It's like, great. It's a rough and tumble, sometimes dirty, very difficult, sure. ego driven, but also passionate and creative and wanting to reach people. And I try to find the good. I try to yeah. find the good in how the music industry is run, as opposed to, you know, the not so good.
And you do. And you've done an incredible job. And I really appreciate all the work that you've done over the years. I have been an admirer at a distance and have read more Shirley Halperin articles that I could probably count. And I've seen you on stages from the back that, you know, more stages than I could probably count as well. And so,
you know, we all need to hang. Yeah,
we're in the same city. I'll let you know the next show that I hit. And then
please. And let me come to the songwriter showcase. And by the way, if you want like a column of Variety, like, it's yours.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. That's,
like,
that's
think about
very
it.
Sweet. Okay. That's very kind. Shirley Halperin, thank you so much. This was really, really great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Today's episode was edited by Maxon Hunter, theme music by Brassroots District, and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.